Hey, welcome to the CCAS Research Podcast, Inquiring Minds Mending Tiny Hearts. I'm Jennifer Lynch, and today we're highlighting an inspiring example of innovation in pediatric cardiac anesthesia education. I'm joined by Manjula Navaratnam from Stanford, who created the Pediatric Cardiac Anesthesia Learning, or PCAL, workshop. PCAL is an interactive, case-based workshop designed to close important practice and knowledge gaps in our field. It's a great example of how a well-designed educational initiative can make a meaningful impact on how we care for our patients and train our teams. We planned this conversation to not only share Dr. Navaratnam's experience, but also to encourage CCAS members to think creatively about their own educational ideas, especially now that we have the new CCAS Education Award to support projects just like this. Dr. Navaratnam, thank you for joining us today, and I'm excited to hear about PCAL and how it came to be and what you've learned along the way.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Lynch, and I'm really excited to be here.
To get us started, could you tell our listeners about the PCAL workshop and what inspired you to create it?
Yes, yeah, so the PCAL workshop, PCAL stands for Pediatric Cardiac Anesthesia Learning. It's designed to be a national educational initiative aiming primarily at pediatric cardiac anesthesia fellows and early stage attendings. And the goal is really to provide some hands-on multidisciplinary kind of focused training and educational opportunities for people as they're kind of going into their practice of pediatric cardiac anesthesia.
Were there specific knowledge gaps that you noticed in junior faculty or fellows that you were hoping to address with this workshop, or what was the overall goal?
Yeah, so when the Pediatric Cardiac Anesthesia Fellowship became ACGME accredited and CCAS began offering kind of robust online didactic contents, I did see a gap and a new opportunity. I felt that the didactic needs were being met by CCAS, but I saw that there was a gap in structured workshop-based applied knowledge and immersive hands-on learning. And so I had this vision for PCAL for a course that would go beyond traditional lectures and provide something that's kind of immersive, practical, and really rooted in multidisciplinary collaboration.
And then once you had this idea, how did you move from an idea to actually launching the first workshop? And what year was that you had the first one?
Yeah. So the first one launched in September of 2022, and it really was kind of moving hand in hand with the ACGME accreditation. And so once I identified that gap for applied workshop-based learning, I shared the idea with two of my senior colleagues and mentors, my chief at the time, Dr. Gail Boltz, and my former chief and mentor, Dr. Chandra Ramamurthy, and they were immediately supportive. And that gave me the encouragement and the momentum to start shaping the vision in more detail. Of what I wanted for the educational part and what I had envisioned for the operational and course marketing piece. And so there were many components to that initial launch. The first thing that I did was to form an organizing committee. Initially, there were four key members and two administrative executives. So the key members and the organizing committee were myself, Dr. Chandra Ramamurthy, Dr. Gail Boltz, and Dr. Komal Kamra, and our two administrative assistants, Esperanza Magalanes and Anna Hong. And so one of the first key tasks that I wanted was to come up with a catchy name and create a strong brand. And I felt fairly strongly that any educational material that we produce should be under the Stanford Medicine name, not only for credibility, but also I thought that if the course became successful, I wanted the content and innovation to stay linked to Stanford. And I also knew that branding would help with marketing, website and visibility, and even things like merchandise, and also to add to the identity and professionalism of the program. And then with the organizing committee, I delegated key operational pieces like developing the website, coordinating catering, arranging accommodations, and my colleague, Dr. Komal Kamra, and our administrative assistants took the lead on those logistics, and that was a huge help. So I gave a lot of autonomy to members of the organizing committee, and that really helped create ownership and buy-in. But I also stayed involved with overall oversight and direction so that the vision could stay cohesive. I then reached out to my cardiology colleagues at Stanford, and they had previously run a very successful cardiology boot camp prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so they were very generous in sharing their experiences. And one of the cardiology faculty member, Dr. Kara Motunaga, suggested that we launch some pre-course video resources. So she shared a few videos from the cardiology boot camp, and then I built on that idea by adding several new videos specific to anesthesia, and I wrote some reflection questions for each module to help the learners engage more actively with the videos. And the rationale behind creating the online learning was so that we could really maximize the weekend workshop time for applied knowledge and hands-on learning. And then on the educational side, I structured the workshop around key themes. For each topic, I chose expert leads and intentionally paired them with junior faculty to encourage mentorship and provide a platform for future educator development. And then I gave these teams autonomy, but with structured support, which was key. And that allowed us to co-create the content in a way that gave faculty a real sense of ownership and pride in the course. And because the leads of each workshop were so engaged in course development, we've been able to refine the content each year based on feedback and make some thoughtful modifications together so that we can keep the course responsive to the learner needs. And for the launch of the first course in 2022, I met with each team individually and we ran multiple practice sessions so that we could refine the content and the flow and make sure we kept the time. And I still remember one of those sessions clearly before the first launch of the course, just a couple of weeks before the launch. And it was a run through with the perfusion team. And I remember feeling quite emotional when I saw how much energy everybody was bringing and how much attention to detail and the commitment, not just from the anesthesia faculty, but from the faculty from perfusion, surgery, cardiology. And that's really what made this course so successful. It started with a vision, but it was really a collaborative effort. And I'm really proud of how the whole multidisciplinary team brought this course to life.
That's amazing. It sounds like it was a very well thought out plan. And then you mentioned how you have been getting feedback and changing it over the past 3 years. What have been some of those feedbacks and changes that you've made to the workshop?
Yeah, so some of the feedback was to add a few more content videos, which we did, and then really refining some of the content so we didn't try to cram in too much within the space period to be a little bit more focused. I mean, some of the feedback is to add more workshops, but we really only have the 2 days, and I didn't want to extend it into a 3-day workshop because at the end of the at the end of the workshop, people tell me they're quite tired and exhausted. Some of the really positive feedback is really with the multidisciplinary teaching that people receive when they come. And so that's something that we've really tried to maintain throughout the iterations of the course.
That's great. That was going to be my next question about what topics you find to be most popular. And it sounds like the multidisciplinary, the ability to talk to the cardiologists and the perfusionists and the surgeons has been
Yeah.
most favorable. Yeah.
So in terms of impact, yeah, so there's the broader impact in terms of improving interdisciplinary communication. So a lot of the fellows in particular have said that they would never have thought to ask their surgeons, to explain lesions and things, because we do our first session is a dissection session with a heavy presence from our surgical team. And so that's been great. And then in terms of specific topics, yeah, they love the hands-on dissection. We have a session where they go through different lesions with actual heart specimens from the pathology lab that our pathologist runs, and so they find that useful. Of course, the echocardiography, and every year the pacemaker session is very successful because I think that's an area where people feel fairly intimidated in the operating room when they're trying to rapidly troubleshoot pacemakers. And so I get a lot of positive feedback from the pacemaker course.
Yeah, that's great. Have there been any challenges over the past few years since you've been doing this?
So I mean, one of the challenges is, I guess, the financial constraints. But, we try to keep a spreadsheet every year of how much things cost. We did make the course completely free for the first 3 years. This year, we're not charging for the course, but we are asking people to pay for accommodation and their own transport. One thing that I really felt very strongly about when I set up this course is I wanted to set up a system that wasn't going to be dependent on one person, so I have tried to build that infrastructure where everybody, there's a kind of distributed organizing committee and distributed leadership so that my goal is in a couple of years, I can hand this off to some of my younger colleagues to continue to run and develop. And so that I think that's important for anything that we're setting up is to because it's a lot of work just for one person. And I don't think it would ever have been as successful if I hadn't brought people in early to help develop it and refine it and operationalize it. It certainly takes the burden off one person doing too much heavy lifting. Of course, there's a lot of heavy lifting to be done a couple of weeks before the course launches every year, but every year it gets less and less.
And who, so the faculty there for the course, is it mostly Stanford faculty, or do you have anybody from outside institutions participate?
The core faculty are Stanford, but every year I make sure that we have anesthesia faculty. Faculty that come from other institutions. So either people reach out to me, prior fellows who have attended the course, or some of our previous fellows who've left Stanford, they come back as attendings to teach on the course. And so everybody who's taught on the course or been involved with the course have every year they tell me they want to come back to teach again. So I think we're providing a very enjoyable teaching experience for people and a team that people are really proud and enjoy being part of. So that, to me, that's really important.
Well, it sounds like this workshop really filled a need that we, we needed for education and that the advanced fellows and the early faculty time period. What other gaps in education do you see for our field, and where should the next initiative focus?
No, I think we have to rethink broadly how we're going to educate in the future. I think with rapid advances in online learning and artificial intelligence, we really have to keep pace with general education delivery. And so I think there's a lot more to be done in that space. I am hopefully in by next year's course, I'm hoping we can integrate an artificial intelligence tutor for the online video resources. So I don't think we'll have that ready to launch for 2025, but I'm really hopeful that we'll get that for 2026. In terms of broad topics or areas that need addressing, I think one area that we can improve on nationally in terms of a national curriculum is topics for cardiac patients undergoing non-cardiac surgery. I know there's various material available in different forms and different platforms, but I think just bringing that together into one cohesive, nationally recognized course, that's a gap that needs to be filled because those cases are increasing and it's always a topic of debate who takes care of them and how do we provide people with the education and the knowledge and the comfort to understand the physiology.
Yes, I completely agree. Is there anything else you think that we can, what could someone listening to this from CCAS and they want to get involved and they want to make a program about cardiac for not, non-cardiac surgery for cardiac patients, where should they even start? So you talked a little bit about how you started PCAL, but someone just listening to this who's never done anything like this, any resources they could use or things they could do to get started?
Yeah, so I think it really depends, like the educational background of whoever wants to do the course. I think if you've not done any kind of education, it's always better to start small. But if you have a lot of experience with education and running different things, then I would say the most important thing is to form a team that's going to help you become successful. Because, like I said, if you want something to be sustainable, to be expanded, having the right team of people is really crucial. And so you may start off with just a small team, like we did for PCAL. We're expand, you know, every year we expand the organizing committee to give people opportunities and to rotate the responsibilities that people have. But I think that is a good place to start, and then brainstorm. I think having some clear objectives about the goals of any course is important, because that really helps you focus how you choose the topics and how you're going to deliver the course. So you always have to go back to the key goals or objectives, because otherwise you could just become lost in a sea of education topics and resources and materials. That would be my kind of broader advice.
Yes. All right. That's great. Thank you so much. I think that's all the time we have, but thank you so much for speaking to me about this today. Again, for those listening, this if you're inter if you if this has inspired you to think of an educational initiative, we now have the CCAS Education Award, and applications are due on August 31st. You can read more about that on our website. Dr. Navarotam, thank you again for coming with us, coming to talk with us today. This has been a very enlightening conversation.
Thank you for having me, and it was a pleasure.
And lastly, I want to share a quick reminder for our listeners. The PCAL workshop will be held again this year at Stanford in Palo Alto, California on September 20th and 21st. There will also be a PCAL workshop in Australia for the first time in collaboration with the Children's Hospital at Westmead on December 4th and 5th. If you're interested in attending or learning more, be sure to visit the PCAL website. And again, if today's conversation has sparked ideas for your own educational project, remember that CCAS now has an education project fund available to help support innovative work just like this. Thank you all for listening.